Hello, Unmani. Great to have the opportunity to have a second interview with you for Here Now TV, or Jetzt TV, the German version. I think we had our first conversation maybe 1.5 years ago. I don't remember the details. And question to start with, what happened in the meantime? What are the recent developments in Unmani's life, if we can call it that?
That's an interesting question. Wow, okay. I guess the expression is always evolving and changing. As soon as it seems to get stagnant in any way, I find that something shakes it up, and then it has to be fresh again. So I guess that's what's been happening more, that there's been a few shake-ups that have happened in the last couple of years. And so there's more... talking more about the paradox of life, and that's reflects where I'm at kind of in my own personal life. More about how the impersonal plays as the personal, you know, and that dance of nothing and everything, and the living of this recognition in daily life. So much more getting into the detail with people, getting a little bit more juicy somehow. and it makes it much more interesting, certainly for me, and also more relevant for people who come to the meetings and the longer retreats that I run. So I guess that's the main thing. And then with that, the continuing unraveling that goes on for me personally, which is endless and has its ups and downs and ins and outs and, you know, and it's all reflected in what I'm saying in the meetings. So that's how it can stay fresh, because it's always relevant to where I'm at. And this never-ending unraveling or unfolding, sometimes is absolutely terrible and awful, and sometimes it's absolutely wonderful and blissful. And it's never one thing. It can't ever be one thing, because as soon as it is, it seems to be stagnant again. And that seems to be the nature of life. So it goes on and on.
So it sounds like an ordinary life. Things are changing.
Yeah, sure, like anybody. You know, that's really what I'm pointing to. The fact that it is about nature. You know, it's about what is ordinary for everybody. It's not a special state of enlightenment that somehow is out of our reach. It's really about recognizing your nature, because somehow we seem to have grown up with this idea, whether it's from society or our parents or school or whatever, that there's something missing, or that we need to be someone, we need to know what's happening, or, you know, we need to know where we're going, what our purpose is, that we need to have it all under control, that we need to be efficient kind of robots somehow. And recognizing your true nature, it's just simply, it is so simple. It is just seeing that whatever you may think has got nothing to do with it, or whatever other people may think or tell you, it's got nothing to do with it. It's just simply recognizing what is beyond all of that. And it's so natural. So as soon as we put it up on some high pedestal, like it's, for very special people, then, the search goes on, and we're always putting ourselves down there and other special people up there, just so that we can keep searching. Because somehow searching is a nice hobby or some kind of addictive self-obsession that, you know, is hard to kick the habit. And just recognizing what is natural is just too easy a lot of the time. And it seems too easy when you've been believing that this goal of enlightenment or spiritual achievements somehow need to be very complicated. So it's much simpler than we think.
So now we can dance around that one, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Are you going to leave?
In my experience, it is not so easy to put it into words. This simplicity, there are various languages that can be used. And you mentioned the belief systems. They are there. There might be some beliefs. Certain things should be in a certain way. I first concept and idea, whoever that is, should achieve certain positions, possessions, power, whatever. But this is just the play of tendencies which are programmed into so-called body-mind. And beyond this body-mind, there is some awareness or recognition of that this play is happening. That's it, fundamentally. So
It is as simple as that. There's a kind of seeing of it all happening, but it doesn't mean that when you recognize that suddenly all of those old tendencies just disappear. You know, they can be here, that it's just that it's recognized that they don't belong to me. They're not my fault, or I'm not doing them. But they still can go on, and they can still be painful and frustrating, and, you know, all of, you know, whatever emotions they seem to provoke. This body seems to remember certain ways of protecting itself. And they're just old habits that just get repeated in similar situations. Even though the situations aren't really particularly life-threatening situations, this body can react as if it is a life-threatening situation. And, you know, when we try to constantly fix these old patterns, what we're really saying is that they're not okay to be here. They're not acceptable. And in that not accepting, then they somehow seem to stick around even longer. They seem to kick and scream and say, you know, kind of demand attention, like, feel me, look at me, you know, notice me. And I find in my own experience that that in those mechanisms being completely okay to be here because they are here. You know, not for any other reason, just because they're here. They're here to be felt, to be experienced. So then they must be accepted already. So it's not even that I need to try to accept them, but just seeing that because they're here, they're already accepted. So they're already included in who I am. So they're welcome, you know. And then, of course, with that, they don't actually ever mean anything about me as an apparent separate individual.
When you said that these tendencies are already there, they are accepted, yeah? And finally, one of the tendencies which are there and are accepted is the tendency of not accepting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's and just that, another tendency, yeah, that, and this is a step back.
And the tendency to not accept, and the tendency to think that I should accept. That's the spiritual tendency. I need to be a good boy or girl and do the right thing, and then I'll be more spiritual, more of a spiritual person, if I can accept it all. And so often, you see a lot of this in kind of spiritual circles, that people are pretending to accept. But it's a pretense. Sometimes they can pretend so well that they start believing it themselves. But it is a pretense, because there's a kind of trying to replicate the qualities of enlightenment by trying to be a good person or trying to accept everything and be unconditional love. But it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work through any trying or pretending. It actually works the opposite way. It works in seeing that this is what's here, and in acknowledging the uncomfortable stuff, in acknowledging the dirt, the mess. Actually, we're kind of meeting what's actually here, meeting yourself where you're at, rather than pretending to be somehow beyond it all. It can be a very common kind of escape in a lot of spiritual circles and kind of non-dual, meetings, that we kind of use this recognition of the fact that I am beyond all of this and aware of all of this as a mental attitude, another way of escaping feeling uncomfortable.
Yeah, there was, I remember a quote, somebody quoted Papaji, one of his most favorite ones, obviously, was the recommendation, sit still and be quiet. And that resonates with me. Yeah? So fundamentally, in this sitting still and being quiet, all has its space, and at the same time, the one who sits still and could be quiet disappears.
It's such a paradox, really, because while you think that you are the one that needs to sit still and be quiet, then there's nothing still and quiet about it.
No, that sitting still and being quiet can happen. The one who sits still and is quiet has to disappear. That's paradox.
And then you see that actually you're always still and quiet, even when you're apparently moving or making noise. Actually, your true identity is always still and quiet, so that then you don't need to sit still and be quiet. Then you're free. You're free to not run around like a crazy person and shout and scream, because who you are is always still and quiet, and that's the freedom. It's the freedom to be a complete mess as a person in this life, knowing that who you really are is always pristine, untouched. So that's the freedom to play being completely touched by everything that happens in life, to be thrown by this and that, whatever waves that life throws at us, because it'll never actually touch who you are. But, of course, the paradox is that it can completely touch this person. So pain or anger or joy or whatever, it is all felt completely. But just knowing that it's not happening to me essentially means that you don't take it quite so seriously. You don't take it to be quite so meaningful. so it can all be there and simultaneously doesn't mean anything. You know, which is a big difference, actually. Although it's a subtle difference, it's also a massive difference. Because when you take yourself seriously and you believe that it's all happening to me, and I'm in control of my life in time and all of that, you take a certain responsibility, you know, with it all. You kind of believe that you're carrying a certain burden that is your responsibility. And it's a very heavy burden. And it makes life very stressful. But in recognizing that it's not your burden to carry, that life doesn't need you to be in control of it. It's already doing fine, just the way it is. It's unfolding by itself without your help. Then, you know, life goes on, but it's just not your responsibility.
Sometimes say that I'm rather being lived than living my life. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're being used by life as this expression. Yeah. But it's not that life is somehow other than you. In fact, you are life. Yeah. Life playing at being this limited person so that it can know itself like this. So that it can play in the limits, you know, because otherwise the unlimited can't know itself. It has to know itself with limits. And that seems to be the game that we're playing. And, I mean, what I'm pointing to in meetings and retreats and all that is the joke of it. That's all. You know, you get the joke. And then, actually, it's the freedom not only just to feel and you know, for it all to be here as it is, but also to endlessly as a buying into this me again. And it's not in the same way as before, you know, when you believed that it was happening to you. It's no work anymore. It's no effort to continually explore myself. It happens by itself, and it's part of that endless unraveling. So that's what happens, like, in my longer retreats. There can be people who have already recognized their true nature, but the endless exploration into, you know, how is this body still buying into it? How do these protection mechanisms still play out? You know, and it's all held in that knowing that I am life itself. I'm not limited to this person. And that I find in my own personal experience and in seeing what happens to other people is that is the greatest healing for all of these mechanisms. Because in that complete and utter acceptance, there's a great relaxation in not needing to fix them. There's a real relaxation with them all, and it's not that they need to suddenly all disappear or that they should or do. There's just a relaxation around all of those mechanisms. They're so welcome to be here, and they're so absolutely meaningless.
Mm. And apparently important even, yeah? Because if there were no mechanism at all, or I would say these anchor points of the psyche, life would not be possible probably, yeah? Because nothing would work. Yeah? So they are absolutely necessary on one side when we use biological language, yeah?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it can be seen just as a play of these mechanisms.
Yeah, it's really about seeing that the thinking or thought and that whole intellectual, all those processes, imagination and memory and all of that, that they are not in charge. They are not the boss. But they are tools that are used by life itself. So while they take themselves to be the boss, then it just gets very stressful and it feels very painful and limiting. But if they can be seen as a tool in who you are, then those mechanisms are very innocent. I mean, they always have been very innocent. They're just here to protect me, to protect this body. And with that goes along this idea that I am in this body. And so then these mechanisms will protect me.
Let's go with it. So there are these mechanisms. They are triggered by something. I try to make a simple example as a starting point. Child is born. Experience of birth going through this very narrow channel is absolutely frightening. Yeah? So there is an experience, now there is risk is possible. Yeah? After 9 months of growing in a protected environment, more or less, then suddenly this shock. Yeah? So there is a knowing about risk, yeah? And the risk of dying. Yeah? Everything is at stake. That can happen here. Yeah? And then, of course, this somehow there is some protection which then enables us to live with this experience. And then other experiences somehow point to that point, can create similar fears or excitements. And these are then the structures which can trigger mechanisms. And all this is recorded. All this is recorded. And then something like mind comes at the age of 3-4, starting combining these recorded experiences and starting to tell the story of me and the reference points. And there is a risk that life continues with this. There is a probability, a high probability, as we can observe, through this, or as this person who continuously records experiences and makes calculations into the future or looks back into the past and tries to protect itself. And this is a mind function, fundamentally. And then this mind function becomes stronger and stronger. In the end of the day, it's the master of whole life. And so everything is seen through the perspective of this I, this reference point, this which is developed over a long, long time, years and decades, and that is it. The structures are rather fixed, and they have been implemented initially closer to the birth. So when the child was very young in an environment where growing happened, so it was all about growth. And then for many, I think in the 30s or 40s, suddenly uncomfortable questions come. So was that all? Then of course these questions are in a completely different, let's say, state of living of this apparent individual, because then most of the work is done. Children have been born, maybe are educated, maybe even start leaving the house.
What you're describing is only obviously one type of life. I mean, I don't relate to several aspects of what you talked about, but I'm sure other people do.
Yeah, I understand. It's just an attempt to tell a typical story. And then the questions meet the structures and patterns which were created decades ago, and this creates conflict and midlife crisis or whatever, because the situation has changed. So then spiritual seeking starts happening maybe for many, and now this confusion, this conflict, these persons with conflicts, meet people like Unmani. So ah, there is an energy. Oh, she's talking something which may be an alternative, which may be a way out, which may be a solution to the uncomfortness that I'm experiencing. So what happens then, typically? They come to your meetings. What happens then with these?
I mean, I would say it's different for different people, because there's some people that just want to feel comfortable. You know, that's their main motivation. Or at least that's the motivation that they're more aware of, that they don't want to feel pain anymore or discomfort. And perhaps they have some ideas about awakening or enlightenment that would be the end of pain. And for those people, they don't get very far with what I'm saying. Because, as we were saying before, it's not really about the end of uncomfortable feelings. So while you're hoping for the end of uncomfortable feelings, anytime there's an uncomfortable feeling, it will be made to mean that I'm still not there yet. You know, because there is when there's no more uncomfortable. So then while there's that belief that uncomfortable feelings means that I'm not there yet, then the searching can just go on and on and on. Because life is bound to bring uncomfortable feelings. I mean, that's just part of life, right? Part of having this body. But then there's the other kind of person who tends to come, and that is someone who has more of a passion for truth. And when I say truth, I'm talking about more of a passion for the way it really is, rather than just to get rid of uncomfortable feelings. And for some people, it starts with wanting to get rid of uncomfortable feelings, but then they discover that actually their deeper motivation, their deeper longing is for truth. And then they're willing to sacrifice this desire to be free of discomfort in order, you know, to see what is real. And for those people, we can really look at the way it is, you know. Because there's an opening there to explore what is really the case. So we can have a dialogue and see, first of all, explore who is here, what I really know beyond my thoughts, how unreliable thoughts really are. And then, of course, in this, there can be naturally emotions or sensations that arise. And then we can also explore those and see whether they mean anything while feeling them completely, also wondering, well, what do they actually mean? Who are they actually referring to? And this is the kind of unraveling that can go on and on.
Feeling the feelings completely, would that be going through just periods of just feeling what is there over a longer time until it relaxes, such processes, or what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, as we're exploring together, feelings might come up, you know, in the dialogue. So if they come up, let's say a person feels some emotion, some sadness, and they feel they start crying, well that is felt and experienced, and there's space for that, you know. So in it not meaning anything, it can fully be here. Like a person can just sit and cry for a while, if that's what happens, or get angry, or laugh, or, you know, or whatever it is, it can be here, because it doesn't mean anything. There's no judgment about it. It doesn't mean that they're a bad person or a good person. So whatever, it can all come up and it can all be felt. And what I noticed that is that for people, it's first of all a little bit shocking that these emotions are so accepted. You know, it's unusual. Because in most places, when you go, if you feel like expressing an emotion, someone will either tell you to be quiet or hand you a tissue to stop it. In some way, it makes people uncomfortable. What tends to happen in these meetings and retreats is that there isn't that judgment. So at first, people are a bit wary, like they don't believe it, but then it starts to flow somehow. And there's a great healing in that, in seeing, in feeling, actually. It's a physical thing, like in really feeling how these sensations and emotions are so okay to be here, simply because they are here. There's already an acceptance, and there's already that space, that kind of acceptance that naturally holds whatever is here. And I guess, you know, my role in that is to reflect that back to people, to show them that actually this is all accepted already, because that's how I treat my own emotions or sensations. You know, they can do whatever they like. They never mean anything about me personally. You know, they never mean that I'm, you know, not good enough or that I'm enlightened or that I'm unenlightened. You know, they never mean that I haven't got it yet or there's something wrong with me. Nothing. They don't mean anything. They're just emotions or sensations that can be here as long as they need to be here. And in that freedom, I notice that they come and go quite freely, you know, quite like a baby in a way, you know, when there's no story about each emotion or very little, let's say, or if there's a story that it's not believed to, even that story is not believed to actually mean anything about me. So even the story can be here. It's just entertainment. It's just like what's happening. No experience that ever happens ever means anything about me. So it can all be so free to be here. And simultaneously, absolutely meaningless. And that meaninglessness is really the freedom. That's really the key. So it's not really about like, just, okay, I'm going to allow all these feelings to be here. Or it's not a practice of trying to be with the feelings. It's not a practice at all. It's seeing that, in first of all, recognizing that the reality is that there is no one in control. There is no one in charge. It's just thought, taking myself to be the one in charge. So if you really recognize that, then already you can see that everything that happens doesn't happen for me. And then if there's no me, well, then there's no meaning. Because meaning has to be meaning for me. Otherwise, who else would care? You know, so then it's actually about the lived recognition. You know, not just recognizing that there's no me and then kind of talking about that and having a certain non-dual attitude or something. But really a lived experience of meaninglessness, which embraces the whole of life. It embraces everything that appears, but doesn't give one thing more meaning than anything else. I guess the way that I work with people is the way that I am myself. So, and that's, you know, you asked before about kind of more recent developments. So that's part of what I meant about kind of the paradox of things. That more in my own personal life, there's more and more embracing of this person, you know, kind of more and more falling in love with this woman, this Unmani woman. It's not a logical or rational, rational thing at all. It's just a wonder at what she's doing now, or what she's saying now, or what she's feeling now.
Logically, the question would be, who embraces who? That does not make sense.
Really the only answer to that is I'm embracing myself and I am all of it. You know, there's no one that's not me. So
again, the logic level, I believe you were trying to point to something else, which here I receive some energy. It's just about, resting with it, feeling comfortable with the Unmani figure. Huh?
Yeah, and seeing that there is no one else, you know, in really recognizing that there's no one in here, then there's also a recognizing that there's no one out there. So then all the mechanisms of, for example, needing something from someone out there, they could go on, but they're also recognized to not be meaningful, because who are they? Who am I going to get anything from out there? It's me. There's no boundary. There's no inside and outside. So although those mechanisms can play, they're not kind of being backed up by any real belief.
Mm. This division aspect loses power. Yeah. So
exactly. It loses more and more power through more and more life situations when it sees again and again that, there's nothing to get, because who am I going to get it from? It's all in me already. So everything I want to get is already here, you know. So it loses more and more power, and perhaps then, you know, the story doesn't even play, but it's perhaps just a physical sensation that happens, you know. And then even that gets a little bit less each time.
Sounds like changing habits, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I've really found in my own experience and in the people that come again and again to my retreats, when I see them like a year or later, or, you know, there's so much lived freedom in this recognition, when you really don't just take it as an intellectual understanding. You know, when you really explore the reality of this belief in a me, at a really deep level, you know, when you really look at that, then you can see that there's no landing place anywhere. You know, there's absolutely nothing to hold on to anywhere, because every single thought or feeling or emotion or sensation or any kind of experience is absolutely meaningless, because essentially there's no one for it to mean anything to.
Knowing about meaning. That's another way of putting it. Yeah? What does it mean, meaning? Yeah? It must not necessarily be a meaning for one person. Yeah? But a meaning has to be known by something. Yeah? And not knowing any meanings, that's beyond even any person. That was triggered by me, but was spontaneously triggered when you said that sentence.
It's any time you think that you know something, or any time you think that one thing is more important than something else, or any time there's a particular story that is believed in about whatever is happening. That's a meaning. And it's not that now you need to try and get rid of all the meanings, you know, because that is also making a new meaning. but it's always about getting to the root of it all, which is questioning this me. You know, who is that? And questioning the validity of all the thoughts. You know, but of course the root thought is this thought me. And that is the thought that all of the other thoughts seem to hang off. So in questioning that one, and seeing that one isn't real, doesn't actually, isn't based in any real direct experience, just simply based in assumption, it seems to be that's the beginning of the unraveling that can go on for the rest of your life. You know, and this idea that there's no end to it, that it's unraveling and that there's no final point where it's all done, can be very disappointing for the spiritual seeker. You know, because so often people are searching for the end of suffering or the end of searching or the end of something, and there is no end. I mean, of course, there is the end of believing in the me, but that's also the beginning of this never-ending unraveling. So in a way, you could say that there's an end of searching for the answers, but it's the beginning of discovering, you know, or let's say beginning of endless questions. So, but it's just, it's not that there's some particular final end to it.
The transition, I would say, is the end of believing that something is wrong to a certain extent, and this opens then all the possibilities that was triggered now. So this not being okay or not okayness belief is a subtle one. And often unconscious. Certain. There are some unconscious tendencies which trigger emotions, which carry the signals or the information. Now this is not okay. And this can come to rest. Can happen.
Yeah. And then it's amazing how the thinking kind of creates some new landing place in some other way. This too is seen through, and then it gets more sneaky, you know. The thinking then pretends to be more of a spiritual landing place, and then that's seen through too. And then it tries to be like a more non-dual kind of landing place, and then that's seen through. You know, and it just goes on and on. It's, you know, it's seeing that nothing that thought says is believable. You know, it's only a tool. It doesn't actually know what it's talking about. It's a very willing servant, you know, to life itself. But as soon as it's believed to be more than a servant, it gets very sneaky. You know, very manipulative. And it then becomes about survival again. Somehow an idea that this me needs to be protected. Again, in a more sneaky version, but it's the same thing.
I think this might be a good analogy with mathematics. So the mind has some certain axioms as a starting point, and then there are deductions. And the whole buildings of mathematical structures can happen around it. But all these mathematical structures are based on these few axioms. And the rest is logical deductions. This is the way the mind works as a servant. But it knows then that it is artificial. That whole building is artificial.
Then you watch thought recreate itself, and you laugh as you're watching it. You know, I mean, not necessarily out loud, but you know, it becomes like a joke. This is thought like trying to land somewhere again. Ha! Keep going, thought. You're very entertaining. You know, never taking you seriously, but you know, you're very entertaining in the meantime. who do you think you're protecting? But, you know, thank you very much for trying, you know, but there's no one here. It's very innocent, you know. Thought is only doing what it knows to do. That's all, you know. It doesn't have, it doesn't know how, what else to do. So it just does what it does. And to expect thought to be different is just ridiculous. You know, that's all it can do. So thought doesn't need to shut up. It doesn't need to change or anything. It can just keep doing it. It's old protection mechanisms. It's just that they don't mean anything. So eventually, you know, more and more thought can see that, you know, that these protection mechanisms aren't really kind of working. Somehow, like, there's no one really appreciating these protection mechanisms. I'm working so hard to protect, but no one's appreciating it. So eventually, you know, it kind of loses its juice somehow.
Yeah, it can be just, I think it can be funny, yeah, when you say, okay, so now as a newcomer, so to say, yeah, I go into this and just play with not following a thought like I did yesterday or 5 minutes ago. Yeah, yeah. So this can be a nice starting point, yeah, just to play with it. Okay, now the next time when this thought comes, I just will not follow. Yeah? And when you succeed, then that will be a good laugh, yeah? Because then you immediately you will notice, yeah, I could follow or not. Then you have one more degree of freedom, it seems.
Yeah. And
that's
yeah.
Fun.
Yeah. And the other thing that a lot of people say to me, you know, sometimes I can have a certain kind of distance from my thoughts, and sometimes they're fully compelling and I feel completely caught up in them. And when we actually examine what they actually mean by that, it becomes obvious that what they're saying is that sometimes the thoughts are not particularly accompanied by any strong physical or emotional sensations, and other times they're accompanied by very strong emotions or sensations that are uncomfortable. And those emotions and sensations then are assumed to be proof of this thought actually meaning something, you know? And that's an interesting one, because somehow it's just that the emotion at that point is believed to mean something. It's believed to be so meaningful as to prove that thought means something.
Yes.
But the emotion itself doesn't mean anything. So it doesn't prove that thought means something. It's just what is felt. It doesn't ever mean that I am caught up in anything. Just because I feel an emotion doesn't mean that I'm caught up in anything. Just is what's happening. Because essentially, you know, who can be caught up? Again, there's no one here. There's no separate me that can be caught up in anything.
That's an interesting one. I mean, this triggers something in me, because when we look in the other way around, when these so to say awakening processes happen, yeah, then there was an experience made here in me that this is. There is some highly emotional music accompanying this. So to say, yeah. And this can be misunderstood. So.
Yeah, it can be assumed to mean something.
Yeah, and in the end of the day, it is not. It has nothing to do with it fundamentally, not only indirectly, yeah, if at all.
It's also a kind of an addiction to the drama of emotion. That emotion somehow it must be meaningful, because it feels so kind of juicy and exciting. It's all very exciting, and to see that emotion doesn't mean anything in comparison to that previous excitement can seem very boring, very dull in comparison. Of course it's not, but in comparison, the thought can say, oh, well, you know, if I don't have that, well, then what's the point in being alive, you know, or I don't feel anything. Well, that's not true at all. I mean, everything is felt, but it just doesn't mean anything.
That's a nice way of putting it. It just doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that it isn't felt, because sometimes people hear that as like an excuse to just kind of be somehow detached, and to be like this watcher that the observer that just observes it all, and that's just a spiritual position somehow that thought can take very conveniently.
So all is felt and perceived, but it has no meaning.
Yeah, because there's no one who has any meaning, who could own any of it, who any of it could mean anything to. You know, the whole referring to this me, the extra little string that seems to attach what happens to this idea of a me. That extra little string is seen through or is cut in some way. So
repeatedly pointing to this deconstruction of the me, or seeing through the true nature of the me. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no way around that. So.
Well, I mean, you know, you can go to therapy and you can, continue to believe that there's this me, and then you try and deal with this me's problems and issues and old patterns, but you never really get to the root of it. You know, so although it can be helpful to a point, it never really gets to the deepest root. And, you know, I'm a little lazy to spend years in therapy. I prefer to go straight to the core of it. You know, I prefer, a dagger to the heart than like lots of slow little cuts and bleeding to death slowly. You know, I mean, that seems to be a quick death rather than.
So, in your experience, how long does it take to die, to kill this I, typically? Huh?
Well, it's different for everybody. And, I mean, one thing to say before I answer that is that, of course, there is never a real me. There is never this I, this me that needs to be killed. It's never real. It's only ever an assumption and perhaps a physical contraction that goes on. It's never more than that. So there's actually never anything to be killed.
You used the picture of the dagger, I mean this.
Well, that's in. It's such, you know, it's one of those paradoxes, of course, that doesn't make sense. But anyway, we'll try and put it into words. While you believe that you are this separate me, and you believe that this me is contained in this body, and then you experience a physical sense of contraction, and you experience that there's something wrong with me, and the world out there hates me, or, you know, I want to fit in with the world out there, and this me, in, you know, and all of that. While you believe that, it seems to be the reality. Even though any time you check it out for yourself, you can see that it's just an assumption and that there's actually no one there. But while you believe in it, it certainly seems to be real. So someone who has that belief will come to me, let's say, and say, you know, I have this belief. I am me, you know, and can you help me get rid of it, right? And they don't say exactly like that, but, you know, along those lines. And what I will always do is I will never buy into their belief that there is a me that needs to be killed. You know, so it will be undermined right from the beginning, in such a deep way. You know, because I'm not believing that they have a problem that needs to be fixed. You know, so it's already undermined. And so any time they are referring to this me, they won't get away with it. You know, it's already any time it's, you know, I will question with them, well, who are you talking about? Who are you referring to? Have a look now. They may tell me stories about last year, tomorrow, yesterday, you know, any other time but now. And of course, because of course right now, there, you can see clearly that there's no me. The me only exists in time and in the stories that we tell to ourselves. So if I'm not interested in the stories about this me, well, then it becomes more and more obvious to this person that there is no me right now. Even though, of course, later on, the me, when they leave the meeting, perhaps, and the me can kind of seem to be believed in again, it seems to creep back in. You know, there can be a doubting and all of that. But the thing is that the beliefs in this me are such old habits that, of course, they will creep back in. But when it's been seen once, it's the beginning of the end. You know, it may not happen. It's more and more confusion and frustration, which, you know, I feel very sorry for these people, but it has to be that way. It has to be. It has to create a lot of discomfort as this belief in this me is seen more and more to be not real. It slowly but surely destroys your life as you think you know it, you know.
System collapses, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, everywhere that you thought you were standing in some safe ground where you believe that this is my identity, that is seen through more and more. And I say it destroys your life because when you see that nothing that you've ever believed in is real, well, then although you may go on doing exactly the same things, you don't believe in it anymore. So, it kind of takes all of the importance out of it, and somehow it's the problem is that it's so much freedom that we don't know what to do with it. We don't know how to live it because it's just so free. We long for freedom, but when we actually start to realize what it is, it's very scary. It's like, you know, a prisoner who's been in prison for 20 years is now set free. And, you know, all the 20 years that they were in prison, they were longing to be free. But when they're set free, you know, when the doors open, they're like, oh, God, it's very light out there. I'm not sure if I can handle being out in that prison, in the big wide world. What am I going to do? And, you know, and I'd rather just lock me up again. But once the doors open, there's no locking it up again. No. You can't pretend that you haven't seen that the whole thing's a joke. And it may not unravel in the timeline that you think it should. You know, a lot of people say, you know, oh, I still have those me thoughts even after a few months or whatever. And it's absolutely perfect. It doesn't need to happen within a certain time frame. Life has its own agenda, which has got nothing to do with you. You know? And
a nice resting place. Huh? It's just yeah. Life has its agenda. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, or whatever. You know, I don't even need to think about what that agenda might be. It's totally irrelevant. It's just what's happening. It's got nothing to do with me. I mean, me being who I think I am. Well. And the thought isn't reliable. I mean, it just imagines this or that. It just imagines boundaries and limitations. And when you start to see that they're just imagined boundaries and limitations, well, then you see how free you really are and have always been, even when you believed yourself to be in a prison. And somehow, slowly, I mean, the other question that a lot of people ask me is, how to function in daily life with this much freedom. You know, and the point is, exactly, the point is you don't know. and it's scary. It can be scary. I mean, it's not always scary, but it can be. But what's particularly scary is the fact that you don't know how. You know, there's no rule book.
Be imagined. It cannot be imagined. And in practice, it's so simple. Huh? Fundamentally, nothing changes.
Yeah.
Huh? But
it's just one step in front of the other. You know, it's just this and this and this. But of course, the thinking wants to control it all and decide how to live and have a set of tools to use. And it might mean that you can't do the same job, or you know, maybe you have to leave your relationship, or you know, somehow it might mean that radical changes have to happen, but it might not. It depends on your situation.
It can be confusing, yeah. So in my experience, of the end of the day, nothing changed, yeah. So, which is good, yeah. So, why not just continue? Huh? Change does not have meaning either, yeah.
No, but sometimes for some people, it seems like they just absolutely have to change because the motivation for doing what they were doing is now no longer there. You know, because perhaps their original motivation for working in a particular job or you know, being in that particular relationship or having that particular life goal or whatever, that the motivation for that has been seen to be, you know, just a need for approval or something like that some old mechanism. And when that's seen through, well, then the question is, well, why am I doing this? Why am I with this person? You know, if that motivation isn't believed in, then, well, things need to be reevaluated, you know, right from scratch again, you know. And it may mean that you can stay in what you're doing, but maybe the motivation changes. Maybe it doesn't. You don't need motivation anymore. But maybe it radically changes. You know? And there's no right or wrong in that.
No meaning anyhow. So there's no right or wrong. Huh? This tells a lot about me. Yeah, probably. Yeah? Nothing changed. So. Except with the exception that the drama is over and it's more fun, yeah, and can take it in a light way. But fundamentally, family has to be taken care of, and that seems to be natural.
Yeah, it can perhaps happen even more naturally. You know, when there's less ideas about what it all means to me and less ideas of responsibility and burden and all of that, then, you know, it just happens easily. Yeah. Then there's no effort.
Joy.
Yeah, and even if there's effort, then it's effortless effort. You know? Yeah.
So this is an invitation to have a look at it, huh? And expand. But nothing wrong anyhow, so no need either. So.
Yeah, but, you know, somehow when we believe in that idea that, oh, you know, it's kind of a non-dual idea in a way that, oh, it's all perfect, so we don't even need to question anything. Somehow, you know, it doesn't kind of get to the deepest longing that people really have, because people generally, I mean, people tend to pretend to themselves, and then, like I said before, like believe in their own pretense. But essentially, people tend to long for reality, you know, for truth. Tell me straight. Be honest with me, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And they may not be like the fearlessness or the courage to really question that all the time, because it can be very terrifying. Essentially, that's what we long for.
Yeah, knowing, getting grounded in what is true.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's really nice to talk to you.
I think we stepped through quite a lot of ground. Huh?
Yeah.
Old Bible words come up here. Yeah? Don't be afraid. Trust yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hold back. Don't be afraid. Fundamentally, yeah? The fear is a big break, yeah? In preventing movement and opening.
Yeah,
it's about changing things. Yeah? It's about, this all is about changing everything, yeah? or being open to completely different realities.
Yeah, and in my experience, it's not so much about not being afraid, but more about kind of making friends with the fear. You know, feeling the fear, acknowledging that the fear is here, and it's okay to be here.
Trying to hide it or escape it.
Yeah, it is here. And it also doesn't mean that I have to go with the fear. You know, I don't have to move according to the fear, but while the fear is here, it's here. And then perhaps there's still an opening to courageously step beyond the fear. Or through the fear, you know.
Yeah, these were exercises which I did often, you know, when some fear showed up. It's just, okay, fear. First of all, it's a discovery. Yeah? Okay, there is fear. And now, feel it. Somehow. And then after, I would say minutes or maybe an hour or so, even the strongest fear needs a break and comes to rest. And even the same fear might come back again. Yeah,
it can come in waves, you know. But I find that when fear is denied, then any other feelings about whatever situation you're in are also denied. You can't actually see really what's going on. Because the fear can act like a big barrier that doesn't.
Which.
Yeah.
So yeah. This is a strong invitation, yeah, to accept fear. Just give it space, and it cannot kill you. I mean, you sit still in your chair and just sense. Nothing
happens. It's just a sensation. I mean. And it seems that the drama around it, like, is more about the fear of the fear. And the fear itself isn't so bad.
Can be intense, can be strange, can hurt almost, on a cellular level. I had also these experiences, but big invitation, just stand and wait. What happens? Huh? And then something might show. Huh? And what I found is in the end, it is in most of the cases a thought, an expectation or a belief, which is just not realistic. And this belief was frustrated and misinterpreted and created a fear complex. And the way back is just go through the fear. Just come in from the other end, where the tail, where the fear is sensed, and go back to the head, where the thought somehow was fixed. And that is not a very comfortable process, sure. But sailing with the sailing ship around the globe for the first time probably was also not so comfortable for the guy who did it.
That's the thing. It's about stepping into the unknown and going, as if like for the first time, like no one else has gone there before. I don't know if you get this in Germany, Star Trek. Do you know this program? There's a line from it that comes up in the beginning, like going boldly where no man has gone before. And it's like that, so often in believing that I am this me and in believing thought generally, thought just wants to repeat and copy everybody else, to follow the sheep. And that's safe, apparently, but living this freedom that you really are, your true nature, is about living courageously. Stepping into the unknown, risking losing everything in each moment. But with that comes a real sense of aliveness. And I'm sure anyone listening to this, like if they can remember some times in their life when they acted courageously or saw through some old belief courageously, it came with a great sense of freedom and aliveness, like a real intensity of, like, wow, yes.
And relief.
Relief. To not be bound by what we believe or what we fear. To just keep taking those little steps. And it doesn't have to be always like in action, although it can be, but just in like stepping beyond thought. That's what I mean by living courageously. Stepping beyond what you believe in, what you think.
By definition, you are on your own in this process because it is your thoughts, the thoughts embodied in this. And nobody can... And then nobody can help. So it's really being straight and, okay, I want to know the truth and I go to that.
That's why I say, it's for those people who come to me with that passion for truth, there's that opening, there's that, like, courage to risk being uncomfortable, to risk the danger. Losing that safety. Then there's an opening, and then we can.
Something beautiful is waiting on the other side. But initially, it might be not so nice.
I don't usually sell it as something beautiful waiting on the other side, just because in my experience with people, it seems to set up a kind of hope. And really, to see through these beliefs, you really have to be faced with the end of hope. To not be trying to get to the other side, or to not be trying to get to more beauty in some way. And just for truth, for no other reason, but just to know the way it actually is.
Brutal truth.
I mean, it's ruthless compassion, or brutal truth, or fearless love. It's that, and nothing less than that will do. Nothing less than the truth will do. And there's no compromise in it.
In the end, yeah, as you said, the sneaky ones. The sneaky ones come. Well, they don't come, they are there. They
love it.
They love it. They love playing their little sneaky games.
So no illusion about beauty, no illusion about, or no promise of anything, no.
No.
I mean, also I can't guarantee beauty for anybody. I mean, I only know my own knowing. I can't say, if you do this and this, you know, then you'll get to beauty.
Well, yeah, can be the other way, huh?
Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm interested in the truth.
And I'm interested in dialoguing with someone else who's interested in the truth. Because that in itself is beautiful.
Just an inquiry into what is real, what is true, is beautiful in itself.
As you feel that courageous aliveness that is willing to question it all,
well, that's enough beauty for me. I don't need to get to the other side of anything.
So I think now it's grounded nicely, isn't it? Yeah. Nice. Beautiful that we came to this point, huh?
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say?
I don't know.
So, should we finish?
Yeah, I'm getting a little tired.
Beautiful.
And now the picture even freezes.
Right.
Yeah, now it's going again. So have a great evening. Thanks a lot, and maybe until another time.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Bye bye.
Bye.